Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another edition of The Big Picture. I am AB Dawji, in case you didn't know. And the program is broadcasting simultaneously from the Radio Islam studios in Durban and Durban's Radio Al Ansar. So, how's your life carrying on, eh? Wonderfully relaxed? Doing some gardening, maybe homeschooling the kids. Yes, helping out, eh? Well, as for me, every day, as I told you, is Sunday. And I don't know if I told you this, at around October, November last year, I had dozens of emails pouring in, telling us about all the, and the email said, please tell us about all the tours for 2020. You know, it never happened before like this, that months in advance, people wanted to know what's happening the following year. So I got many, many people planning for 2020, getting leave or locum or something like that. Dozens of emails and calls, very, very excited. And you know what? I thought that, wow, it's going to be a bumper year. Got to check when the new C-class comes in. Going to be a bumper year, that's what I thought. But you know the one big truth, eh? The one big truth that we all should be constantly aware of. We can plan as much as we like, but who is the best of planners? You got it right. Now to another matter. Dear listeners, I need to offer my deepest apologies to many of you out there. Seriously, eh? Seriously. I'm really sorry about a subject I discussed last week. The issue about how I have taken up ironing my clothes. It seems that this has caused a great deal of ruction, of consternation, dammal, jagra. Lots of topis have been banished off to the spare room with a big pile of washed clothes and told to do something useful instead of demolishing a mountain of butter and Mari biscuits every day. Some have actually been inspired after hearing that the whole ironing clothes process is very therapeutic. Good for the brain, I said. My buddy from old days from Actonville, Nazir, said that when he's over his shoulder op, he's definitely going to take a shot at ironing, eh? But another fellow from Witbank was very firm. No, I can't do that. It's not for me. So from the feedback, it seems that I have stirred a hornet's nest. If A.B. Dawji can do it, why can't you? See, that's what made him so clever. He knows about Palestine and Donald Trump. And so go iron and maybe your brain will also come right. Listen, guys, take it easy, okay? That ironing thing is not difficult at all. And since I am unemployed, I've got two ideas. Firstly, two ideas about how to make some income. Firstly, I am prepared to offer an online course on how to iron clothes. Say for about 100 rand a lesson for 1 hour every day, I will show you how to set the steam settings for different fabrics, how to iron the collars and so on. After 1 week, I will post you, I'll email you a certificate with the words graduate of the A.B. Dawji College of Ironing. Well, that doesn't sound very impressive, does it? So let's change that to this. Graduate of the Dawji Academy of Apparel Compressing. Ah, now there you are. You can hang that on your office wall or your lounge wall or wherever. And a very funny image just came to mind. Dozens of bullies standing behind ironing boards with steam irons ready in front of their laptop webcams. Ready to start their lessons. So that's the first way I'm going to make money. The second way is this. I did some very serious research and determined that it takes approximately 2 minutes, 37 seconds to iron a shirt or pants. So, in 1 hour, I could iron about 25 shirts or pants. If I start an ironing business and charge 5 rand a garment, that will make me 125 rand an hour, which turns out to be about 1,000 rands a day, times 6 days a week, that is 6,000 rands times 4 weeks, equals to 24,000 rands a month. Hey, good heavens, eh? My unemployment days are over. Over. Okay. So it won't be a C-class, but maybe a nice Polo or Corolla, ne? Something like that. Well, that's it, boys. You can do it too. Contact me urgently for the online ironing course. I already hear the phone ringing. Or did I just stir up another hornet's nest? And speaking about stirring up a hornet's nest, boy, oh boy, has sewerage hit the fan? Has the excrement hit the fan? But first, let me tell you what you already know. For over half a century, we had a policy of discrimination where one race regarded as superior to the other, regarded itself as superior to the other, and therefore was qualified to rule. It derived its qualification to rule from what it claimed to be from the Bible. And so this group ruled by what was called, what it said was God's will. And ruled is an understatement. The white government, the apartheid government, jailed, tortured, killed, massacred, displaced people, demolished homes, subjugated, oppressed, brutalized an entire people. Eh? No justice, no peace, no human rights. Apartheid was a crime against humanity, a dirty, stinking, rotten, murderous policy, a cardinal sin. And then in 1994, it came to an end. And South Africa unveiled a constitution that was regarded as the finest in the world, really. Really, people examined it and said it's the finest in the world, guaranteeing the human rights of all, justice for all, freedom for all, equality for all. A secular democracy, a wonderful constitution, and a custodian of this constitution, the top lawman, the sheriff, the Mino, Capo de Capesti, was given the job of Chief Justice, and that is Mokgweng Mokgweng. So one must assume two things. Firstly, that he has a very sharp brain, a top drawer, intellectual, incisive, decisive, insightful, totally absorbed in the idea of justice, eating and drinking human rights, dignity, freedom, equality, and so on. A person of integrity, high ethics, unbiased, a person of deep compassion for the downtrodden and oppressed, a beacon of light for the nation. The custodian of the Constitution, the Chief Justice. Justice being the operative word. And then our Chief Justice opened his mouth and put his foot into it, unleashing a firestorm of unbridled criticism and condemnation. Let me tell you, folks, I have over many years had encounters with Zionists, supporters of Israel. And they have often put across strong points that I had to refute. It was not easy. As I told you last week about a room full of pro-Israel supporters in Washington that I had to face, and also a lawyers group here in Durban at a meeting. It was head-to-head, toe-to-toe stuff. I remember one guy put his face right against my nose and asked, "So, do you accept the right of Israel to exist?" I shot back at him. I said, perhaps, you should frame the question and answer it yourself. Should Israel exist at the expense of Palestinian suffering? Well, he was speechless. I don't want to go into all the hasbara, that is the propaganda points that I encountered. They were strong ones, very challenging ones indeed. Now, let me say this. Whenever previously I heard our Chief Justice Mokgweng deliver a lecture, I was quite impressed, very impressed by his eloquence and forthright dealings with contentious issues, especially on the political front in respect of justice and the law. I held him in high esteem. But in a matter of about 3 minutes, all my respect for him went straight out of the window, evaporated completely. You know, I don't want to demean him in his office of Chief Justice. He mentioned that as an ordinary citizen, he has his views, so I will address him as an ordinary citizen. Mukhang's interview was so shallow, the interview that he had, I suppose you all know about it. It was so shallow and insipid, weak, that it was nothing but plain silly. I just couldn't believe that this was the same man who I just a short 3 minutes ago held in extremely high esteem. My head was becoming hot and cold as I was listening to him. Hot and cold. Not that it had anything to do with my menopausal state. At 35, that's not possible at all. But seriously, in his blustering manner, he spoke such a load of nonsense that, quite frankly, it left me shocked. One of the worst things that happened over the past century was the Holocaust, a horrible crime against humanity. Apartheid was another. And for the past 72 years, one particular enduring crime has been the Zionist arrival in Palestine and the systematic decimation of an entire nation. Pain and suffering on an unimaginable scale, never ending, right to this day. Jailed, tortured, killed, subjugated, oppressed, exiled, displaced people, homes demolished, and entire people, the Palestinians, systematically brutalized by Israel. Many prominent South Africans went there and saw for themselves firsthand. That's the problem also here in South Africa. Many people don't know really what's happening. So, as I said, many prominent South Africans went there. I don't have time to quote all of them, what they said, but most said it was apartheid, and some said it was worse than the apartheid. But let me just say, read to you what Desmond Tutu had to say. Desmond Tutu, the former Anglican Archbishop of Cape Town, said, I have witnessed the systemic humiliation of Palestinian men, women, and children by members of the Israeli security forces. Their humiliation is familiar to all black South Africans who were corralled and harassed and insulted and assaulted by the security forces of the apartheid government. These are his words again, those who turn a blind eye to injustice actually perpetuate injustice. If you are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. It doesn't matter where we worship or live. We are members of one family, the human family, God's family. Words of Desmond Tutu. If I have time, I will play you a clip by one of the world's foremost intellectuals, Professor Noam Chomsky. You must have heard of him, maybe sometime later in the program. So I told you last week, on the 10th of November, 1975, the United Nations declared Zionism as racism. Under U.S. pressure, this resolution was cancelled on the 16th of December, 1991. So Mukhang was interviewed a few days ago, and what did this man, who was oppressed under apartheid, have to say? What did this man have to say about the oppression of the people of Palestine? What did this man, who himself was oppressed under apartheid, have to say about the oppressed people of Palestine? And the answer is nothing. Zero. Not a single word about justice for the Palestinian people. Not a single word about justice for the Palestinian people. In fact, he gave a good reason, according to him, why he must not focus on any injustice that the Palestinians are suffering at the hands of the Israelis. Did you get that? He gave a good reason, according to him, why he must not focus on any injustice that the Palestinians are suffering at the hands of the Israelis. Why must he turn a blind eye? Because God told him not to do so. Yes, folks, you heard me correctly. God told him not to do so. He opened the Bible and read out a psalm and said, "He who blesses Israel will be blessed by me, and he who curses Israel will be cursed by me." But I'm going to unpack this statement. And before I do that, I want to speak to a very eminent activist during the apartheid days, and even now, for the Palestinian cause, and that is someone who is well known to you, and that is Ronnie Castles. Ronnie Castles, welcome to the big picture.
Well, thank you, Salaam Alaikum, to you and to all the listeners there. I'm always so happy to be with you.
So I'm just going to ask you one broad question, Ronnie, and thank you for giving us your time. I know you had a very, very busy morning, so maybe 5 or 10 minutes of your time will be most welcome. What do you make of what the Chief Justice said in that interview?
Well, it's absolutely outrageous. In the first place, as so many people have said, I mean, it's caused an uproar in our country because he's not just a religious figure, and we respect people from all religions, as long as they talk sense, of course, because we know how these things can be twisted. But it's coming from the Chief Justice of our Constitutional Court, and he really ought not to mix politics, which is what he really was talking about, with the Chief Rabbi of this country, who actually makes all the same errors as the Chief Justice has. Consigning the Palestinians to being another people who we shouldn't have any concern about at all, and just adopting a fundamentalist biblical narrative. And I say fundamentalist because the Bible is not history, it's about faith, and there are very many different views of it. So it's absolutely outrageous that someone with his responsibilities and representing the highest court in the land, which we all respect, and we cannot tolerate the kind of utterances that the Chief Justice has made. I support the call of people to refer this to the Judicial Commission. I've made a statement, actually, that he really ought to apologize to the Palestinian people. But I've just heard you quoting from the Bible, and if you don't mind, I want to just hurry into that direction, because you see, the problem with people quoting from the Bible is, as I've said, it can be done from so many different angles. To what it should be doing is to provide us with a moral guide, and that moral guide runs through all the Abrahamic faiths, as well as the other key religions of the world. And we've seen people who distort for their own interests. I'd say the Zionists definitely have done so, and that's a political doctrine about using the Bible to claim that land is given to them exclusively by God Almighty. And evangelicals, we've seen the rise of this ugly crowd in the deep south of America, in the White House with Pence and Trump and so on, and how they use this. We also see the way it's used. I would say, in a way we respect so much. I'm referring to the African churches of Zion, using Zion not in that way that the chief justice and the chief rabbi do so, but the protest from the underdog, the oppressed, where they see in the biblical symbolism, whether it be David smiting Goliath or Moses and the escape, so it's claimed, from Egyptian slavery. I say so it's claimed because, let's be clear, the symbolism, that ancient narrative in the Bible is written hundreds of years later by scribes who are trying to justify the claims their tribal Hebrew groups are making. But when it comes as the cry from the oppressed, we absolutely understand that cry, freedom from slavery and oppression, which is what our people in South Africa have known all about. Why Mandela and our people see in the Palestinians that same plight and the need to escape from the most awful military occupation, not just in the occupied territories, but second-class status within Israel itself. No need to go through what's been happening since 1948, the ethnic cleansing, the ecumenical genocide, the brutal shooting down of men, women, children, and now this annexation and criminal annexation against international law, something which the Chief Justice should know well about. But he burns his fingers. He makes himself look totally stupid by getting involved with a chief rabbi whose belief is based on a Zionist political doctrine and where they use this fundamentalism. The three religions of the book, which is historical, by the way, the Old Testament is actually based largely on mythology. I'm not now taking issue with religions or even nation states use mythology, but it's faith. It's not scientific. There's no proof of the existence, actually, of Moses and the Red Sea and that Exodus and David and Goliath and all the imagery which Zionism uses. And this idea that a god of all religions is actually just a jealous god of the Judaic religion, from which I stem, by the way, and used to oppress the Palestinians and to rob them of their land, dispossess them of their land in the whole way that colonialists have done, which is how we understand the loss of land in this country, and then the merciless slaughter of people. So which is history? Even the New Testament, there's no actual historic factual evidence that Jesus lived in the Roman times. There were many Messiah figures who rose and spoke to the people who were under the yoke of the Roman Empire, very cruel indeed, and sought to organize and agitate amongst the people to overthrow that yoke. And many of them did so in the way we found it in South Africa. The only way they felt was through force of arms, the right of resistance against invasion and oppression and so on. And there were others who wanted to do, as the New Testament tells us, turn the other cheek and do it through a pacifist way. The one of the three religions that actually is based in history, and I'm talking now in real scientific history base, is there was indeed a call in the prophet and peace be unto him, Muhammad, from the 6th, 7th century in the modern era. There is historic evidence of such a person and his following and his offspring like Muhammad Ali and so on. So let's bear this in mind when we start looking into the Bible and try to utilize it for what is patently the ends of Zionism. The Zionist founders were not religious in any sense. They were either atheists or agnostics like Herzl and company, like Ben-Gurion. And they used the Bible, that mythology, those stories, which are incredibly powerful. David slaying a Goliath, and Moses taking his people out to, of bondage to freedom. Very powerful. They use it to the ends of simple inclusivity, exclusivity, of excluding everybody but the so-called children of Israel and so on. And this is abominable in the extreme degree because it actually undermines the main golden cord of all those religions of the book, as well as Hinduism and Buddhism and so on. What is that golden thread, that value which is faith-based, but we also, those of us who believe in science and not in the biblical creation sense, but evolution and are non-believers but respect those great religions. What I learned from my mother and my father and my grandparents from Judaism was that the essential element was treat thy neighbor as you would treat yourself. And that is the key. The chief rabbi is forgetting that tenet. The chief justice is forgetting that tenet. Bamboozled, allows himself to be bamboozled. And therefore, the people who have provenly lived in what we call Palestine, the Holy Land, whether they came in through the expansion of Islam in the 7th century, that's 1300 years ago, or were already living there, which is actually the main fundamental basis of that population, which goes back to pre-Judaic times, and that is the Canaanite kingdom, which was that whole area of Israel and Palestine today and parts of Jordan and even Syria and parts of Iraq and so on. It was a big kingdom. There were small little groups and kinglets within a Judea, Samaria being two very small ones. But the people there, some who converted to Judaism and later to Christianity and later to Islam, are the original peoples of that whole Canaanite kingdom. Why is it that when Moses leads the people, according to that biblical narrative, out of bondage, and it's claimed that the Lord their God says, I will give you the land of Canaan. What is that particular narrow deity doing? He's telling them, you can take this land, you can smite every last man, woman, child, dog, cow, sheep, and goat. You can take this land for yourselves. That aspect of the Bible should not be accepted at all. It's not history anyway. It's self-justification then for the Hebrews, as it is now for the latter-day Israel Zionists. And that is what the chief rabbi has fed into. And at one fell swoop, he has cast the Palestinian people who have lived there for time immemorial, and he has cast them aside without feeling, without concern, and he's playing into the hands of that chief rabbi of this country, who is a mouthpiece of Zionism and of this absolute colonial racist settlement of Israel. And that is absolutely wrong. And by the way, that is anti the Judaic faith as I have come to understand it, and as many Jews, including those within Israel, very religious Hasidic Jews who don't recognize the state of Israel for the reasons I've been giving and more, and Jews like Ilan Pappa and others, and some in our country, and many growing numbers in a country like the United States, because they're so ashamed of any connection with the regime during and with this period of Black Lives Matter, of any regime that looks at people with darker skin color as not deserving the right to be treated as we would wish ourselves to be treated. So it's absolutely scandalous in the nth degree, and this chief rabbi the chief justice ought to hang his head in shame and beg forgiveness. He needs to apologize, because this country, apart from a small grouping of people believing in Israel Uba Alles, and they're not only Jewish people, we see how the fanatical evangelical types around the world do so as well. And we are affronted from every possible view. We call on our people, all of our people, stand by the Palestinians and follow that great statement of Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela, that we cannot feel free until the Palestinians are free. And that's what we're calling on our government to do, to apply boycott, divestment, and sanctions, not against Palestinian people, as the Chief Justice is doing, but against this colonial Zionist monster that is Israel. That's what I can say to you, AB, today.
Well, no, we seem to be losing you, Ronnie. Ronnie, can you hear me?
Did you hear?
I'm afraid we'll have to leave it there, listeners. You have been listening to Ronnie Castro's responding to what's been happening, the storm breaking over the head of the Chief Justice. So we'll unfortunately have to leave him there. Right, so I was telling you that the Chief Justice has turned a blind eye. And why? Because, according to him, God told him. Right, welcome back. We had some sort of a technical problem there. And I don't know at which point we went off air. So let me just cover some ground here once again. I said I got a long list of what Israel did just in the past week that was shockingly unjust. But injustice is out of bounds for the Chief Justice, something that he cannot speak about, otherwise he will be getting on the wrong side of God. Because Chief Justice, your belief is that God is on the side of the oppressor. My response to that is to quote a famous lawyer, wrong, haram, evil. Now to the next part of Mukheng's diatribe, and for this let me paint a picture. If you own a shop and an employee keeps stealing from you every day continuously, and you notice that things are missing, disappearing, and then finally one day he owns up and says he's sorry and won't do it again, then you will probably forgive him. I'm just painting a stark picture. The apartheid government brutalized black people horribly, and the people resisted. There was an armed struggle, and came 1994, and the white man gave up, and the black people had the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, a mechanism of forgiveness to say you did bad things to us, but let's leave it in the past. Our Mukheng says that the colonialists came to Africa, oppressed the people, took their land and stole all the minerals and so on. Why are we still friendly with them, these colonialists? The answer is that they left. Portugal left Mozambique, the Germans left Namibia, the French left Algeria and so on. Gone. So, yes, there's a bitter taste, of course. But the colonialists are gone. So, he says, why then do we also not be friendly with Israel and forgive it? What a ridiculous analogy. What a comparison. The answer is glaringly simple, Mr. Blustering Big Mouth. The colonialists are still there in Palestine, colonizing every day, oppressing every day, killing every day. Man, I'm really starting to wonder about this man's ability to grasp simple logic. And for me, the worst part followed, where he asked the profoundly stupid question, did Israel take our land here in South Africa? Did Israel steal our minerals? He means that Israel did nothing to us, so why should we do anything bad to Israel? This is supposedly an educated man, and he knows how Israel collaborated with the apartheid government in its oppression of the blacks. But that aside, if in the old days the whole world thought that way, hey, South Africa didn't do anything to us, so why should we do anything to South Africa? Guess what? We would still be under white rule today. To put it simply, my neighbor is beating his wife every day. I can hear her screams, but I will not interfere because he is not beating me. Let me not analyze his silly interview anymore, except to make a few general observations. Firstly, about my personal response. As I said, I had immense respect for Mokgeng as Chief Justice, the custodian of the Constitution. A solid guy, unflappable, a staunch defender of human rights. In a matter of 3 minutes, he demolished all of that. I now have no respect for him at all. Second point, this is a black man who suffered the slings and arrows of oppression. Some white people still sing the praises of apartheid. They lament its passing. But Mokgeng, you should be standing with the oppressed Palestinians, because Palestinian lives matter, Mokgeng. Palestinians' lives matter. Palestinians' lives matter. But let me tell you why I am happy. No, I didn't take the headache the headache pill that I took last week. Dear listeners, there is a wonderfully huge silver lining to the cloud that broke into a storm over Mokgeng's head. Yes, a silver lining. In a way, I am glad that he said what he said. Why? Because the backlash has been absolutely incredible. I am really, really, really surprised. So many prominent organizations have come out with guns blazing, shooting down his silly arguments. The ANC, the EFF, Jewish groups, churches, labor organizations, prominent anti-apartheid activists, etc., etc., all asking Mokgeng whether he lost his marbles. And more importantly, in their statements, they spell out the fact, the facts, the details of exactly how the Palestinians are victims of a vicious apartheid regime. Yes, they show the parallels between Israeli apartheid and South African apartheid. All this has been creating huge awareness about the actions of a criminal state that is seldom reported here. Huge awareness. I love it. I love it. Watch tomorrow's newspapers. And my final point is this, and let me say this boldly and clearly. If a man who is regarded as being the highest ranking authority on justice, the epitome of justice, who is supposed to speak out strongly whenever he encounters injustice, is selective in his condemnation or wittingly turns a blind eye to it, then that man is not a man of justice. Mokgeng spoke about Israel, but totally ignored the clear, striking fact that Israel has repeatedly, continuously contravened and defied international law, the UN Charter, the Fourth Geneva Convention, and a myriad of other human rights laws. If a lawman cannot see these laws, then he is not fit to be a lawman. So my view is that the Chief Justice has to go. The former President of the United States said, he was quoting Dante, there's a special place in hell for those who choose to remain neutral regarding a moral issue. Mokgeng, I wonder where your interpretation of the biblical text you refer to will land you. This morning I was telling my son-in-law, Nazim, what I would be saying on radio today. And he said, hey, boss, don't you think you will get into trouble? I laughed and told him that Chief Justice Mogoeng is the guardian of the South African Constitution, which strongly supports freedom of speech. So Mogoeng has a duty to defend me when I talk cuck about him. My apologies to sensitive listeners, but that was the best way that I could put it. Well, there you are. I hope I covered it all. We've run out of time. This is Ibi Dawji bidding you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.